Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Paul Barkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score's senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Paul Barkish with Dan Bernstein on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
There's only one quarterback. And so that comes with the territory that we all understand that when you win, you're going to get a lot of praise that you probably shouldn't get, and when you lose, it's the same way. So, that said, we all understand that. I understand that as a head coach. We understand that as a team. We know offensively there's a lot of, the magnifying glass is on us because we didn't score enough points. That's what it comes down to, is you have to score touchdowns. You got to score points. You got to be efficient in the red zone. You need to win. That's how quarterbacks are evaluated. And, Mitch, in the last 2 years, he's 19-10 as a starter. And so the quote-unquote expectations, the standards that we have, we didn't reach them last year.
That's Matt Nagy on the Rich Eisen Show. And the quote that I wrote down there, the poll quote, when you win, you're going to get a lot of praise you probably shouldn't get. That was a direct response to a question directly about Mitchell Trubisky, and I found that telling. Hub Arkish is on Twitter at @Hub_Arkish, and he is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hub, my eyebrows raised when I heard that, when Rich Eisen asked him about that. And he said, it was directly what happened with Mitchell Trubisky was the question. And he said, when you win, you're going to get a lot of praise you probably shouldn't get. That tells me that he never thought Mitchell Trubisky perhaps was as good as maybe some other people did or we did.
Well, I guess that's a reasonable reaction to it. I don't know if it means he never thought he was as good or could be as good, or is that he didn't play as well. And he didn't play all that well. I mean, there was nothing special about that 2018 season in terms of what Mitch did. The numbers were nice. It got him a Pro Bowl alternate shot. He ends up going to the game. But when you look at the total yards he passed for, the number of touchdown passes, the TD interception ratio was pretty good. He did a lot more with his legs in 2018 than he did in 2019. But it's not like he, emerged in the way that a Patrick Mahomes or a Deshaun Watson have. And that's the measuring stick he's forever going to have to deal with.
I just wonder, too, how his initial feelings about Mitchell Trubisky, how this tells us, perhaps, what he thought when he took the job. That obviously he wanted to be a head coach in the NFL, and he had this opportunity to do it, but maybe this gives us a better sense of what he realized he was getting into and what he maybe knew early about what the learning curve was going to be. I just think we can kind of apply some of what he's saying now retroactively to maybe understand why it's been more difficult for him to establish what he wanted and why they went out and got Nick Foles.
Well, it's funny because I just finished a column last night. As a matter of fact, it's up now. It's in the papers today, I guess. You can see it at ShawMediaIllinois.com, where I went back and I looked at a lot of, not all of, but a lot of the best quarterbacks of this era, 8 guys in total. I included Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, Matthew Stafford's in there. I'm forgetting one other. And I checked all of their stats for their first 3 years as a starter. And what's interesting about it is that Trubisky fits perfectly. His production through his first 3 years as a starter is near identical to, well, when I say near identical, you know, the ratings and the averages, specifically the passer rating, near identical to Tom Brady. It's better than Drew Brees. It's not far off of, I think it's better than Matt Ryan. You know, the numbers suggest that he is really not that far off where he should be as his third year as a starter. When we talk about what Nagy really thought about him, one really good source has assured me, and I've confirmed this with a couple others, he really liked Mitch. He didn't like him as much as Patrick Mahomes, but he did really like Mitch and probably still really likes Mitch. Now, you know, in terms of his physical attributes, as far as what goes on in those meeting rooms behind closed doors, during the conversations, what Mitch is learning and how quickly he's learning it, these are the things that will frustrate a relationship, and this is the part that we don't know where it's at right now. But I can tell you that he did think that Trubisky was an excellent quarterback prospect when he got here, and there is reason to believe that Mitch Trubisky is still a very good quarterback prospect based on, you know, where he's at this stage of his development.
You think so? I mean, don't you think that you think other teams around the NFL think that, or there's all it takes is one general manager to think that? I'm just curious why, what motivated your desire to sort of set out an objective case for him still being potentially a, I don't know what your ceiling is for him, but still potentially a valuable quarterback.
Yeah, and again, Dan, this isn't my, you know, my personal view of him. It's not a prediction. I'm not saying he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. I just think he's been treated and measured very unfairly because of the expectations and kind of the boat that Ryan Pace put him in, you know, when he made the unnecessary trade up one spot and then took him, you know, 8 spots ahead of Patrick Mahomes and 10 spots ahead of Deshaun Watson. But, you know, what we forget is that almost every other analyst and drafting GM in the league had them rated similarly. And yet, you know, Trubisky, from the moment he got here, has been measured by all that, and it's an impossible standard to live up to. You know, his rookie year, it didn't matter because, you know, Watson was playing well, but, you know, not doing anything unusual. And people forget Patrick Mahomes was on the bench his entire rookie year. I think the piece that is often forgotten about Mitch Trubisky, it's not forgotten, it's just not discussed enough, is that 13 college games isn't enough to become an NFL quarterback. There has never been another quarterback drafted in the first round with less college experience than Mitch Trubisky. You look at Aaron Rodgers, who is one of the greatest of all time, 3 full years on the bench in Green Bay, got into 7 games, never started one. Phillip Rivers, 2 full years on the bench. Tom Brady and Drew Brees, a full year on the bench. And yet here's Trubisky, you know, with 13 games, and he's starting 12 games as a rookie. And then he takes a big step forward his second year, and then a big step backward last year. But when we take a step back and view it, you know, with a little bigger prism, so to speak, there's still room in there. Now, my concern about him is that I don't see him reading the field any better after the third year than I did halfway into the first year. I don't know if he has that innate feel for the game that the great ones have. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. When I hear these analysts breaking down his mechanics, you know, and his motion and everything, that's ridiculous. You look at the mechanics of Brett Favre or Patrick Mahomes, you'd think they could never play in the league. So, you know, yes, I'm sure that there are a few, I don't know how many, maybe one, maybe 10 other coaches, scouts, GMs who'd like to get their hands on him. And, you know, we'll see. Part of the point that I made in the column is I don't feel bad for Mitch Trubisky. I mean, I think he's made about $20 million so far, going to make another $9 million this year. He knew what he was getting into. But when you take a step back and take all the emotion out of it and all the bias and, you know, just look at the numbers and the traits and the stats, yeah, you know, there's a possibility he could still be a really good quarterback if he's got the head for it. And this is what we never know about these kids coming out of school.
Are you disappointed that the 4th and 15 alternative to the onside kick, the untimed one untimed down, that was tabled?
No. I mean, it was interesting. It would have caused some excitement. I don't know how fair it is. It seems to me And Danny Parkins did have some stats on this, although I was surprised that there was that many more onside kicks last year than there were fourth and 15 attempts. But according to the stats, percentage-wise, you're twice as likely to convert a fourth and 15 as you are an onside kick. And I don't know how fair that is to the team that has gained the lead. You know, I know once you have the lead, you have to recover, you know, the onside kick or not let them score on fourth and 15. But I'm not sure why you want to make it easier for the team that has been losing to have a chance to come back and win. That aside, you know, it certainly would be exciting. You know, so I suppose I think probably the way I would have gone was the 1 year experiment, much like the pass interference rule. Give it a shot and see what happens. But I don't you know, love the rule that much that it bothers me that they're not doing it.
So of the rules that were adopted, do you have any strong thoughts about the experimental sky judge, everything else that that they're going to try to do? Because some of it all seems kind of half-stepped to me.
Well, I completely agree with you there, and that's why a lot of this stuff doesn't do much for me. But I think the experimental sky judge has to be a good idea because we've been having this conversation, not just you and I, but every football fan everywhere, for three decades now since they first started experimenting with instant replay. And we've always wanted them to get it right, period. It makes it a better product. It makes the game more fair. When the officiating is as close to perfect as it can be, and it's obviously far from that now. I think whatever they can do to try and make it better, and it really needs it, you know. So I think this is a good way to go about it, particularly if they can do it without, you know, disrupting the flow of the game and having to go to replays and this and that. Now the issue is going to be, though, that you got to have, I guess on any given weekend, 16 sky judges who are, you know, near perfect in what they're seeing. Because again, where you really get into trouble with this is if you start fixing some things and not others. That's what was always wrong with the 1 year experimental, you know, pass interference rule, is why pick that one play? We'll see if it does improve the quality of the officiating, but I do think that's the experiment worth having. It may be the best option they have right now.
Where I see the pitfall in the sky judge idea is that he or she can't initiate a call. It has to be an appeals process where still someone on the field with those human eyes on the field has to see something that isn't quite right, or they want extra help. I would love it if the sky judge could throw a flag. If a yellow light goes on, just if somebody says, hey, look, I saw this, that's a flag, because I have a better look at it from there. You know, that's, for me, when you don't allow that person to initiate a call, it makes it kind of clunky, because then you're still relying on the current flawed system.
It does, Dan, but this is where, I'm theoretically up there in the sky when I'm in the press box, when I'm not doing games from the sidelines, and I'm sure you've watched games, I know you've watched games from press boxes, and you know that even though we're up there in the sky or whatever it may be, you're still focused on some element of the action. You're probably following the football. And so even the sky judge is not going to see everything. That's the real flaw, is that, you know, what you may need is another team of eight officials to get it right, because, you know, you're going to have the sky judge who, if he happens to be looking at what everybody thinks got messed up, that'd be fine. You know, but what if he wasn't? And so I guess that's why something needs to be triggered to say, what are you looking at? Now, the real key for me is can the sky judge look at everything? You know, if there is a caution or somebody asks for a look, can he look at both, you know, things that were flagged and things that weren't flagged? And if he finds something that he wasn't asked to look at, can he correct that? That's where you get back to this issue of, you know, if you're going for perfect, you got to go all the way. You can't just let them pick out certain plays that they can correct or overturn.
Here's what I have on the list of categories for the conference that can be initiated by the referee with the replay assistant, aka sky judge in this case: game administration, complete, incomplete, or intercepted pass, touching of a loose ball, boundary line, goal line, or end line, location of the ball in relation to a boundary line, the line of scrimmage, the line to gain, or the goal line, down by contact, and if the rule was not ruled down by contact on the field. only specifically there, and status of the game clock subject to the limitations in Rule 15, Section 3, Article 9, Item 1. There you have it.
Well, to me, the immediate question, okay, what exactly qualifies as game administration?
Right.
I mean, what is that one? Because what I didn't hear in there is, holding, unnecessary roughness, clipping, blocking in the back. I mean, I got to study that a little bit and make sure I understand exactly what we're talking about. But this is where they always get in trouble. You know, they're going to fix things, and they end up, only being able to fix certain things because they think that maybe they're the most important. And then the game plays out, and they find out that the most important thing in the game wasn't on their list of things they could fix. So this is going to take a little study and a little practice. But going back to the initial question, I mean, if it doesn't, the biggest problem I have with all the stuff they try and do to make the game better is when they come up with these rules that make the game worse, and the unintended consequences of some of these things. So as long as this one doesn't come with significant unintended consequences, and if they get half of it right and they don't take anything that was right and make it wrong, it could still improve the game.
I don't mean to blindside you with this, but it's something that's been weighing very heavily on me ever since I woke up today and turned on my phone, which is really the worst aspect of modern human existence, of that feeling of looking at that black monolith that's lying on the nightstand and saying, what fresh hell is coming here when I turn it on? And the images from Minneapolis and from Louisville and the rising plumes of smoke and seeing all of the anger over injustice, and then the anger over the anger. How dare these people destroy property? Is there a way to peacefully protest? And all I can think about is, yeah, how about actually maybe quietly kneeling in a quiet moment by oneself to protest exactly what is being protested now so violently, so frighteningly, so powerfully, the murder of unarmed citizens. And it makes me rethink of what happened with Colin Kaepernick and how wrong it was, how the ongoing injustice of forcing a quarterback in the middle of his prime to end his career because he dared peacefully protest what is being protested so violently now. It made my heart hurt to think about that and to think about what Colin Kaepernick was forced to give up, because all he did was do exactly what people are asking of these violent protesters, is, yeah, sure, protesting is fine, but don't destroy anything. He didn't destroy anything.
Well, no, there was, and I don't remember who initiated it now. I know I retweeted it as soon as I saw it, which was, if you had a problem with the first knee and didn't have a problem with the second knee. And then it went on to say something, prophetic that I'm not capable of. But mm-hmm. The point was exactly what you're saying. And, this is where we get to the whole, stick to sports thing and don't go too far and whatever. And I don't want to rankle anybody today, but it just, I think you may have said it best. It makes your heart hurt. I've been having trouble for months now getting up in the morning. I have to look at the phone to see if anybody's trying to reach me, and I see, what horrible things happened yesterday, because they're happening every day now. And it clearly is about, can I say this without upsetting anybody, we call it lack of leadership or leadership in this country today. Maybe it's because of the leadership, not because of the lack of it. But nobody's getting us where we need to go, and while they're clearly is one more guilty actor than the rest, there's plenty of blame to go around everywhere and on all sides. And, listen, it was murder. It's horrible, what happened to this particular individual by that Caucasian police officer. It's not the first time. There's too much of it. We have to figure it out. We got to do something about it. But these kind of things are happening every day, and you don't want to see anyone protesting and getting violent in the way that they are right now. And I don't understand the degree of violence and destruction that's going on, but I certainly understand what's caused it and how much longer are we going to let this continue to happen without doing something about it. So I wish I had something,
No, and I don't mean to put you in an uncomfortable position, but Hub, we've talked at length about Colin Kaepernick and about what happened and how it happened, and to see it now come to this point and see it still happening and getting worse, and there's no increased understanding, there's no increased empathy. And I wish there was some facile way to compartmentalize any of it, but it's real and it's awful. And ultimately, I hope there's some way of restoring something to Colin Kaepernick, who had his football career taken from him because he dared say that these kinds of murders were bad.
Well, that I was thinking the ultimate shame of it. Maybe this should have been my simple answer to you. Is that I'm going to guess that a significant portion of our audience right now, I don't know what the percentage is, doesn't know or just chooses not to understand that what happened to George Floyd is exactly why Colin Kaepernick took the knee.
Correct.
It broke down in the beginning. nobody pays attention. Nobody's listening. Nobody wants to hear what's going on. This is what he was talking about, and this is what it's come to now 3 years later. And I don't think, I mean, I don't pretend to know the kid. I've, interviewed him a couple times. I don't think what he's thinking right now is, and this cost me my career, he's thinking, look what it's come to, and we're still not doing anything about it, I just it leaves me speechless sometimes. But the main point I hope everybody hears, now that I think of it, I'm glad you brought it up, is it's really that simple. What happened in Minneapolis 3 days ago, I guess it was, is why Colin Kaepernick took a knee. And now look at where we are. Not only what's happened to his career, but look at where we are 3 years later.
Thank you, Hub. I appreciate it as always.
All right. Take care.
That is Hub Arkush, our senior Bears and NFL expert. I'm Dan Bernstein, and I am on Monday through Friday, 9 to noon, live and local on Sports Radio 670 The Score. When we come back, Dean Blandino, the NFL's head of officiating, was on Bears All Access last night on The Score. So we've got some chunks of sound that I want to play for to hear the guy actually in charge of some of these new rules. And we got to stay on top of this, because otherwise we turn on the NFL game and we have no idea what's going on. So he's going to help us sort it all out, because he was on these airwaves just last night. So you'll hear from Dean Blandino next on The Score.
When you think Chicago sports, think Mully and Hall, Chicago's most listened to sports morning show, hands down. They cover all of Chicago's teams, from the daily wins and losses to the most historic moments in Chicago sports. Trust Mully and Hall to start your day, mornings 5 to 9, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
And more. If that's not enough, we're throwing in 4 Samsung Galaxy phones on us. And now, Sprint customers enjoy access to expanded coverage on the T-Mobile network. Shop from the comfort of your home at Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores. Phone after $35.42 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within 2 bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with autopay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules, $30 activation fee, and restrictions apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment's brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance is committed to serving Chicagoland during these unprecedented times with industry-leading delivery and in-store safety measures. Memorial Day sale pricing and an extra 5% back on most appliance purchases. Shop grandappliance.com for offer details. Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. Dean Blandino is the NFL's officiating chief, and he was on Bears All Access last night. And their conversation began with Jeff Joniak asking for Dean's thoughts on the NFL owners tabling that proposal that would have changed the onside kick rule.
I know there are a lot of people at the league office that want this to happen, and usually when something gets tabled like that, they didn't have the votes. So however they did it, if they canvassed the virtual room and ultimately it didn't have enough votes to pass, so they tabled it. They're going to try to have more discussion, work through some of these issues. I don't know if they're going to get to 24 yes votes. They got some work to do, but whenever something like that gets tabled, the league office wants this to happen, and they don't want to go down without a fight right now.
Dean, is it an open debate? You know, is it like the Lincoln Douglas debates when they're up there trying to, you know, fight for each side of this argument? And, you know, was there ever a time that maybe it was going to be swayed in that 4th and 15 direction?
Yeah, you know, it is an open debate. I don't know. This is obviously, right, new ground virtually. Usually when you have these discussions, there's two people from every club. Everybody's in the same room. The entire competition committee is there, and you can go up and speak your mind and have that conversation. This was done virtually, one person from every club. So I'm sure there was some dialogue, but probably not as much as when you have coaches in the room and things like that. I think this has gained momentum. Probably 2 weeks ago, you wouldn't have thought this was even going to be this close, and it's certainly gained some momentum because, again, I think there are people at the league office that are pushing this, that want this to happen. And, you know, I think, like I said, they've got some work to do. I think there's still some issues. I don't hate the idea, but I like, you know, whenever you're going to make a fundamental change to the game, I just think you need to make sure you vet out all the unintended consequences. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Dean, that's where I want to go with it, because much like the pass interference call, no call, that just got went away like the dodo bird, I want to cover this rule because in a past today it says, to make permanent the expansion of automatic replay reviews to include scoring plays and turnovers negated by a foul in any successful or unsuccessful try attempt. I believe last year it only happened like 10 to 12 times, but yet they felt it was enough to where they wanted to move forward and pass this rule.
Yeah, that was something, you know, like you said, it doesn't happen very often. It does take the pressure off the coach that during a try, regardless of what happens, regardless if it's ruled good or no good, it takes the pressure off the coach that he doesn't have to challenge. It puts it on replay. Scoring play that's negated by penalty, turnover that's negated by penalty, doesn't happen very often. But again, it takes it out of the coach's hands. They don't have to use that and potentially lose a timeout, and it makes it an automatic review, which I think is a good thing. But again, it doesn't happen very often.
Dean Blandino, our guest, a football rules analyst on the NFL, Fox Sports, and NCAA, joining us here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. I'm old school. I'm old-fashioned. I like things to stay the same. I resist change, Big Dean. So this 4th and 15 idea, really, me personally, as a play-by-play guy and a lover of the game, I know safety comes first. I do. But the whole idea of moving things away from the kicking game, aside from that, just in the kick return game and whatnot, I just worry down the road that the elimination of some really exciting plays, no matter how lack of success percentages say there is, would be something that we're going to miss at the same time. But I do like the idea of expanding the defenseless player protection for kick and punt return.
Yeah, you know, I'm like you where, again, I don't think this needs to be changed in terms of the 4th and 15. This is not a player safety change. Anyone that tells you that, the data, there's no significant data that says, you know, the 4th and 15 play is any more or less safe than an onside kick. It's just, they don't have that at this point. I like the execution of the onside kick. If you're a team like Atlanta that has a kicker that can do it, you know, more power to you. I do like the protection. Look, the defenseless player protections have been a significant and a much needed change over the last however many years, 25, 30 years, and allowing the kick returner that extra protection, that not just when they catch it, but until they have the time to protect themselves, just like a receiver. It's more or less been officiated that way, but to put it in the rule book, I think is a necessary step.
Dean, like the pass interference and like the 4th and 15 onside, is there another powder keg topic out there that we're going to be paying attention to 2020 and beyond? Or are we waiting for the first onside kick to come up and then the whole argument will restart depending upon who gets it or doesn't get it?
Yeah, I mean, this onside alternative isn't going to go away. You know, if they do eventually get the votes and maybe they call for another vote, I think the big thing now is going to be, right, a sky judge. That concept, they agreed to have a preseason experiment, and I think that's going to be the next big thing. Somebody up in the booth, we already have a replay official, but can that replay official, can we expand their purview and let them help the crew in other areas other than catch, no catch and scoring plays and things like that. So I think it'll be interesting to see how much of an experiment we get, you know, how much of a preseason are we going to get, and are we going to get, you know, a good indication of what that could look like during the regular season. So I think that's probably the next big thing.
Yeah, Dean, I want to piggyback off of what you just stated there, because it would be an eighth official added to the crew. And I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly or anything like that, but, you know, you look at the, and this is what Troy Vincent talked about, the VP of football ops at the league office, about the recruitment of officials, if you have to add more officials, and that would be an eighth official added, or, God forbid, say during the fall, some of the officials get COVID-19. Will there be extra officials available for games? How is the recruitment of officials going to expand it and get it up to date?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. It comes down to people. It comes down to personnel and having qualified people that can step in. There are 17 officiating crews. There's 17 replay officials. I can't sit here and say all 17 are on the same level in terms of competencies. Just like anything else, there are going to be some people that are better than others. And I wouldn't say that all 17 of those could step right in today and be an eighth official up in the booth and handle additional duties. So that's the challenge. And I think the NFL has to continue to find the right people, coach them up, teach them, train them, and get them ready. Because, yeah, we're going into a season with – you know, something that hasn't happened in our lifetime, and who knows what's going to happen with people potentially getting sick, and you're going to have people ready to go to step in. So I think personnel is going to be a big challenge.
Remaining anonymous with Dean Blandino, the outstanding rules analyst for the National Football League, Fox Sports, and NCAA as well, the former VP of officiating the National Football League after the interference experiment. How will that now translate, do you think, on the field?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I've never seen a rule change go in for 1 year in my time that was just not even proposed the following year. It was just a complete, like, and these aren't my words. I mean, Troy Vincent said it. It was a complete failure. And to have, you know, just the way it was implemented, they struggled with finding the right standard. And I think it started to affect the officials on the field and wondering, you know, what is and what isn't. If that's not pass interference, if you don't overturn that, I'm not going to call that the next time out. So I think, again, getting back to if pass interference is a problem, let's get back to the root. Where does it start? It starts with the officials on the field. Teach, coach them up, make sure they understand what it is. I think we saw all the unintended consequences of reviewing those subjective fouls play out last year. And as you think about a sky judge and adding things to what's reviewable, those have got to be some of the, you know, some of the considerations. You know, how far is far enough? Do we need to fix every little thing, or can we let the officials officiate and let replay help when it's necessary?
Dean Blandino, the head of officiating for the NFL, with a very complete look at what they did and what they didn't do on the league level to adopt some new rules. That was Bears All Access on the Score last night. I'm Dan Bernstein, and the Midday Midway is coming up next. And as we go into the weekend, I have something that I didn't know about a certain cocktail that I thought was something, and I guess it's not, and I've learned about it, and it gets back to an old Terry Bores joke that I can't not think of when we discuss this drink. I also have some very, very old cognac that is very valuable. A sandwich is making a comeback. It's not a sandwich for everyone. It is a sandwich I happen to like, but apparently there's a certain ingredient that is flying off shelves at a 30% higher rate over the last couple of months, and it's creating a newfound love and appreciation for, I think, an oft-misunderstood sandwich. And we'll get your thoughts on all of that in the Midday Midway next on The Score.
This is Chicago's number one sports station, dominating Chicago sports talk for nearly three decades. 670 The Score is Chicago sports. Chicago sports is 670 The Score. Radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three,
4.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
It's time for the Midday Midway. We started the show by talking about the Ricketts family's spokesperson's response to Scott Boras calling out the Cubs for how they manipulate the financial picture and are plowing profits into debt servicing for all the real estate that they've gobbled up. And they sort of talked across each other. We talked about the strategy of why the Cubs would think it would be right to push back against Scott Boras because of long-held views that maybe a negative Q rating in the eyes of fans because he was sort of the symbol of big player greed. It's not how it used to be. Things are different now, and I think the Cubs trying to land some easy blows there on Scott Boras in large part failed. Those punches don't land in the same way when their statement doesn't really refute anything Boras is saying. It just gives them an opportunity to restate their 70% number for what their game day revenue means to them. It may be true, maybe kind of true, it may be true-ish, but it does not in any way address at all what Boras is saying and what he is telling his clients and telling influential members of the union about teams like the Cubs that are invested in certain ways that don't show up in some of the baseball numbers. We talked to Ryan Dempster. We had a fine conversation with Craig Calcaterra that's going to give us something to talk about in the next segment as well, because I need to throw this open and we need to grab some phone calls on the topic. Hub Arkish talked football. We also heard from Dean Blandino on some of these arcane new NFL rules. All right, what would you pay for a cognac vintage 1762? An exceedingly rare Gautier cognac, one of the oldest surviving cognacs in the world. Only 3 bottles of it are left. This is the largest bottle of the 3, known as the Grand Frère or Big Brother. And this sold for $146,000 in an online auction. The winning bidder will also be treated to a bespoke experience at the Maison Gautier Distillery in France, founded in 1755. And the backstory is fascinating. This was the former owner who put it on sale, told Sotheby's. In the 19th century, his great-grandparents fostered an orphan named Alphonse, who later left to work in the cognac region. Alphonse returned home a decade later, carrying a cart full of bottles of cognac. It is thought that Alphonse may have returned home due to the phylloxera crisis, which destroyed the vines and threw winemaking regions into economic crisis. So Alphonse returned home with the bottles, which he may have been given in lieu of wages. Among them were 3 Maison Gautier cognacs with their labels perfectly preserved. Alphonse went to fight in World War I in 1914 and did not return. But the bottles remained in the family. And for that backstory, able to fetch $146,000. Now, while we're talking about booze, I was reading an article here at CNN about the summer bar at home and getting top picks from industry experts and tricks for how to maintain your bar and what's really popular right now. Apparently, the Aperol Spritz is really popular. Not for me. That's the Italian wine-based cocktail drink with Aperol in it, which is an aperitif similar to Campari. And apparently, they say the popular drink, you have to have the go-to here. They talked to Chicago-based Julia Mamos, who co-owns Bar Kumiko. And she says, it's the highball. And what does the giraffe say when he walks to the bar? The highballs are on me. I thought the highball, for all this time, my entire life, I thought the highball was a specific drink that I just didn't know what it was. I thought there were certain ingredients, and there's a highball glass, and you make your highball, and I didn't know what it was, and somebody came in, give me a highball. Apparently, and I didn't know this, I mean, I should have known this, a highball is any spirit and a mixer over ice. Garnish, no garnish. Any spirit and a mixer over ice in a highball glass is a highball. Rum and Coke. Gin and tonic, the now popular gin and sonic, which is part tonic water and part soda that came over from Japan, the Aperol Spritz. I had no idea. I always thought a highball was a thing. I didn't know a rum and coke was considered a highball. So I'm now at that, I'm that many days old that now I know. Okay. where are we in general on the tuna melt? Is this a thumbs up? Is this a thumbs down? Is this a sometimes maybe in a certain way kind of thing? Where do we stand on the idea of classic tuna salad, some kind of cheese, melted like a grilled cheese sandwich?
Never, ever, ever, never, ever in my life will I eat any form of mayoed tuna.
Oh, so you don't eat any tuna salad at all?
No, it's absolutely horrifying.
Really?
Smells terrible. It's full of mayo, which I hate. I'm out.
I have learned to love the tuna melt. I did not grow up with tuna melts. I grew up with, because my mom's tuna salad is still the best and the only, because it's actually made with regular tuna in oil, not albacore in water. And apparently, American home kitchens are going crazy for canned tuna right now. That according to a Reddit spokesperson, there's been an increase of over 30% in mentions of tuna melts across the platform. That includes an 18.7 million member food community. Canned tuna references were up more than 60% across Reddit. People are reverting back. So the preferred tuna melt for me, this is just me, if it's at a diner and they've got it on there, like, you know, late lamented Jerry's Grill, Sky Point, pour one out for Jerry, it would be on toasted rye with cheddar cheese and crispy bacon. Like a patty melt, but it's a tuna melt. No onions, though. Unless there's onion in the tuna salad proper, which is fine. The other way that I've really enjoyed it, I love Mariano's tuna that used to be on the salad bar, and I don't know how you're going to get it anymore, and how whatever that regular Kroger Mariano's tuna is good. And by the way, Subway tuna, also good. Underrated. That I would get the Mariano's croissants, and I would put tuna, the crumbled bacon bits, the cheddar cheese, and toast the croissant to melt the cheese into the bacon on the tuna, close up the toasted halves, and eat it. That's living, man. I don't care what you say. Jay, you gotta get over some of these irrational fears.
It's not a fear. I just, the thought of it makes me gag. I just can't. And I think part of it is what you're describing as the fake tuna. I see, like, the bags of Starkist tuna in the store that are somehow shelf stable despite being fish.
That's the fish in the vending machine, right?
Yes. No, I don't want that. It's so gross. The thought of it makes me gag, honestly. First of all, I hate mayo. I hate mayo.
No, I don't get that.
I have tried and tried. I have tried to, like, okay, maybe now that I'm older, I'll like it. Every time I taste it, I feel, ugh, I just hate it.
So what about like a spicy mayo on sushi?
I will handle that a little bit if there's something mixed with the mayo. You know, if there's something spicy or whatever, I can somewhat tolerate that. But pure mayo on a sandwich, ugh, no way. I will say there's two exceptions. I will make my grilled cheese with mayo instead of butter. It grills up really nicely that way, and you don't really taste the mayo.
Yep.
And there's mayo in Portillo's cake, and I'll deal with that too.
You'll find some way to deal with the mayonnaise and the Portillo's chocolate cake. I'm happy to hear that the tuna melts are getting appreciated in that way, because you really don't need any fresh ingredients. You don't have to get your perfect BLT. But I will tell you this, that a well made, nicely conceived BLT is also, but that, see, that has mayo on it. Like, you couldn't even have that.
I can do a BLT without mayo. You can order it without mayo.
Oh no! But the Hellman's mayonnaise is food of the gods. It is.
I have tried. I'm open minded. I'm not like campy where I just won't try stuff. Mm-hmm. I will try things aside from tuna, but I cannot convince my brain to like mayo despite trying really really hard to do it.
What about a fine aioli, like a really well-made? Do you like hollandaise sauce?
I don't know if I've had it. I might have had it on something, but not really noticed it. But aiolis, I'm usually fine with. But most times, I'll say hold the aioli just because I'm not sure about it.
Because it's fun
a place
to say.
I know, yeah.
Hold the aioli.
If it's a place I know and a place I've had it, I'll go with it. But I don't like surprises, and if it's gonna ruin my meal, like, I'd rather just skip it. So. That's the last thing, in fact, I don't need to add mayo to my resume, by the way. I've got enough fattening items in my life.
I think I'm doing tuna melts. Like, that sounds really good. You're going to ask why I'm doing this story, because it sounds kind of pedestrian. But trust me, there's a reason. A Tulsa, Oklahoma man received a suspended sentence Tuesday when he pleaded guilty to a felony drug offense in connection with a traffic stop and an arrest last year in Joplin. He pleaded guilty in Jasper County Circuit Court to a felony count of possession of a controlled substance in a plea agreement, allowing a suspended sentence and dismissing related counts of forgery and unlawful possession of a firearm. Judge David Mouton assessed this man 7 years on the drug conviction, but suspended execution of the sentence and placed him on supervised probation instead for 5 years. This is Joplin, Missouri. The man was from Oklahoma. And you say, okay, so what? He's 37 years old, and I am not making this up. This is from the Joplin Globe. You can find it at joplinglobe.com. That man's name is Benjamin J. Dover. Ladies and gentlemen, they have arrested Ben Dover. And I check this. This is real. This is an actual guy. I don't know if he was aided and abetted by Hugh Jass or his other friend Haywood, whose last name I'm not going to say. But some people, some mother and father with the last name of Dover actually named their son Benjamin. I didn't think it was possible. But we have actually found it. But he is under arrest. I wonder then, like, sociologically, psychologically, is somebody named Ben Dover more likely to fall into a life of crime?
It means he's got crappy parents.
That's what I'm saying.
37. It's one thing if the guy is in his 60s or 70s. We're like, oh, we didn't really realize the joke. 37. Those parents knew exactly what they were doing.
Right, I understood that the former mayor of Fort Wayne, Harry Balls, that they, and that's true. It's Baals, and his name was Harold, and he went by Harry. And perhaps there was a time, and this is a longer time ago, and more innocent and polite times when a man could walk down the street and be elected mayor. By the way, Mayor Harry Balls, and they actually there's a building in Fort Wayne. There's a Harry Balls Center in Fort Wayne. We played the whole news story about it. I mean, the local news treatment of it was brilliant.
My wife had a teacher or someone in her school named Harry Bone.
Ooh, that's good.
Is it?
Was it B A?
Harry Ashcraft.
And congratulations to the graduate being read there by the governor of Mississippi, Harry Ashcraft.
Harry Ashcraft.
Way to go, Harry. Congratulations.
Harry Ashcraft.
That's how the Midday Midway is going to send you into your weekend. All right, we need to talk about something here, and it came up with Craig Calcaterra a little while ago. And I'm going to put this out there, and I want to hear from you at 312-644-6767. And that's the same number, by the way. If you are a texter, that's the number you now have to text. The old short code doesn't work. You have to text 312-644-6767. So I want to know about your relationship with baseball and what this absence from the game, what the lack of baseball is doing to change, if at all, the way you think about the game. Because we got pretty curmudgeonly about it. And we were, you know, muttering and moaning and groaning about the quality of play and the pace of play, the length of games, the way the young generation was reacting to it. And now we're it's killing us to not have whatever it is, whatever your relationship is, having it on in the background. Maybe the just knowing it's there, knowing it's going on, has some level of comfort to it. How has a break from baseball, how has baseball taken from us, changed, if at all, your relationship with it? I want to know what you think at 312-644-6767. I'm Dan Bernstein. That's what's coming up on The Score.
Hey, Lawrence Holmes here.
Being live and local with 670 The Score is more important than ever. So as America adjusts to the new work-at-home environment, trust us to keep you informed, entertained, and perhaps have a laugh or two along the way. Just tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score from radio.com and stream The Score live from your smart speaker instantly. 670 The Score is live and local, a radio.com sports station.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.